Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, a show that offers you tips and strategies to help speakers build the business of their dreams. Now, here's your host, 30-year industry veteran and business coach, Jane Atkinson.
Well, welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, everyone. Today, we are talking about how to expand your speaking business by including consulting. And you know, there's really not been a better time to explore your revenue streams than the last year. So we brought in Bill Fournette to the show to help explore this idea. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, Jane.
Oh, I'm so happy. I mean, we've talked before. I actually am a coach to one of your employees, but we'll talk about that here in a second. Bill, tell everybody what Persimmon Group, which is your company as a whole, does. And then I kind of want to break it down into all of the good things that you're doing over there.
Sure. So Persimmon Group as a whole is a business management consulting firm, ranging with clients on everything from strategy and executive coaching through project management, organizational change, process improvement. And then it also has a training and instructional design service. Well, it's been around for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we've been, for the most part, a fairly regional player here in the southwest part of the United States. But we have clients all over the world that we may support in some of our consulting, training, or coaching engagements.
And just to get an idea on the scope here, tell everybody how many employees you have.
So we have 25 employees, and then we also will bring in sometimes contractors to supplement staff based on client needs.
Okay. So one of the divisions that I know very well is Persimmon Speakers. You have kind of like a little boutique agency within Persimmon Group. And I work with the beautiful Jill Nickerson, mm-hmm. who runs that for you, and coach her. And tell us why the agency and what was the premise behind that.
Sure. And Jill's awesome to work with, like you said. Back about 15 years ago in Persimmon's history, one of the things we found was that through our consulting, we really were kind of coming at some of these problems differently. And this is back in the mid-2000s. We felt there were shifts that were going in the way we worked and in the workforce. And the speaking business came out of that as being a way of being able to get our brand out there with our thought leadership in front of audiences that ultimately led to additional engagements for us from a consulting and coaching side. Mm-hmm. But it really came out of almost a marketing branding approach originally and was not something that any of us necessarily did full time. And so our focus on the speaking was to have good, practical, functional speakers that would enable our clients or the participants at those conferences to walk away with some of the value that they might get in a longer term consulting engagement. But we kind of gave them the tip of the iceberg, if you will, in those sessions.
And a couple of my favorite clients, Paul and Amy, have actually come on over and become a part of your stable to be managed.
That's right.
Okay. So now, we talk a lot over here about picking a lane. You have actually been known in the lane of disruption from kind of like an optimistic standpoint for a really long time, way before disruption was cool. Way before COVID. Sure. I mean, talk about disruption. We are going, I don't know that 2020 and 2021, I don't know that we will ever go through years so tumultuous as we are right now, but who knows? Maybe it's just going to stay going. What do you mean by what? Give us your take on disruption.
Sure. So let me say where it started from was before disruption became cool, right? And as you said, these last 12 plus months, you don't have to convince anyone that disruption is here. It really started evolving in the mid-2000s around the generational shifts. And I was doing speaking around generations and how do you lead the workforce, the changes that we were seeing. In fact, my very first speaking presentation was titled The Perfect Storm, based on the George Clooney and Marianne Mastrotano movie. Yes. And it was really, which kind of a leader do you want to be? The one that thinks this is just the same as always and it doesn't end well? Or do you want to be the leader who recognizes there are some things that were changing foundationally? So what Age of Disruption means, having studied it now for and spoken on it for more than a decade, is that we are living in a world where the only certainty is uncertainty. Things are changing at a speed and at a pace and as dramatic as they are, technology, generations, the way we work, it's all been culminating in these past 5-6 years. We've seen a lot of leadership teams now starting to recognize this, and they may not know where they need to go, but they understand things are changing. And so for me, what I watch for is how do you build stability in the middle of this disruption, which is what we call the age of disruption. And studying team performance, studying techniques and approaches, and then also applying those as a consultant has enabled me to find some of these approaches that are working well inside of organizations that allow them to have this consistency in how they approach change without it just being hair on fire, chaos, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. At the same time, watching for what those trends could be that are coming next that could cause a disruption in an industry, a sector, a company, or just a society as a whole.
And you probably just hit on part of the answer of this next question is as professional speakers, people whose primary source of revenue has come from speaking, how can they turn all of this disruption into their own competitive advantage?
Sure. Great question. So I think there's a couple of challenges. First is you want to make sure that you're staying within the lane that is why you are in speaking, right? So
yes,
everybody will have their own angle. And what you want to look at is asking yourself first, how is disruption affecting my angle or my area? And the second is then getting down to what are the questions that people in the audience are asking today? And the example that I use, you mentioned about sort of me being optimistic with disruption. I feel like there's two ways of looking at change, whether it's change in the generations, change in the technology, change in the way we work. We can look at it as the glass half empty, right? Which is saying, oh no, it's change. I don't like it. I'm going to fight against it. I'm going to push against that change. I like the old way. Or I can look at it as an opportunity. And what we find is the successful companies and organizations are those that are very eyes wide open, looking at what's going on, listening, recognizing that what you may see as a first data point of a trend may not actually be a trend. It may just be an anomaly.
Right.
And so by taking that in as a consultant, which is always trying to understand where is the customer coming from? Where are that their real root cause challenges and how might this affect them personally? That is what has helped us as we've been able to expand into that coaching and consulting side. Now, what I would say for speakers that are looking at this, one of the things that was foundational for me was we tailored our speaking engagements based on the conference or the audience. I built my company that way. I had worked with consulting firms in the past that I would say, kind of look at your demographic of your company and the sector that you're in. And then they take a presentation or a solution off the shelf and they say, hey, Jane, there's your solution.
Yes.
For me, I wanted something different. I wanted to understand the culture because I can have the same solution potentially for 5 different clients. But the way I approach the solution is different because I get to know the individuals. What are their drivers? What are their concerns? And I believe as speakers in shifting in that direction for coaching and consulting, you have to start with that basic premise. What are the questions? What are the concerns? What are the challenges that that audience member or that client have? And then how do I take what I'm really good at, my area of expertise, my passion, and find the angle that allows those two to intersect.
I love that. Okay, so going beyond the keynote, we've talked about this in terms of somebody gets a call, can you do such and such virtual event on such and such a date? That is a transaction. How much will you charge for us to, March 17th virtually? Mm-hmm. Moving from transaction to transformation. And I think that consulting and what have you, there's a path that includes consulting. It could include not consulting, but a series of events or what have you. But the idea is that you are starting down the road to ask some questions that allow you to go way beyond the transaction to something that's more transformational. I mentioned asking the questions. I'm sure that's where you start when somebody calls you for a transaction.
That's exactly right. And I love the way you compare that a transaction to transformation. I'm a big follower of the experience-based economy, and transformation is that next level. And I think at times it's very easy for speakers and speaking engagements to be perceived as just a product, right?
Right.
And you're trying to get beyond that. So the very first question that I ask clients, whether it's a speaking engagement or potentially a coaching or consulting engagement, is what does success look like for you when we're done? And a lot of times I find in business, people jump to the conclusion that they know what that answer is. They usually think of it in terms of, like you said, a transaction or an output or a change. But those are all actions to get us to some sort of an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually teach that technique. I call it leader's intent. And it's answering the question of what does success look like for you after we're done? And that gives me a lot of insight that is usually beyond just the typical output response. From there, I'm able to start to understand philosophically where are they in their own thought and identification cycle. Have they identified the challenge or the need? Are they not recognizing it yet? And therefore, they kind of get a sense that something's going on out there, but they're not sure what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That helps me understand, do I need to help improve their recognition, share some things? Is it that they've already recognized it? Now they're just looking for some help, guidance, or coaching towards making a change or the solution, whatever that may be. Or are they looking for, hey, I've got it. I've got a plan. I just don't know how to execute it. And that becomes a different set of questions. And so understanding kind of where they are in that range or spectrum helps to better tailor my questions and responses to them. But I'm still using tools out of my tool belt that I developed as a speaker and that I present on.
Right. You mentioned generations earlier. Let's say somebody calls you for a transaction. Oh, we want to have you come and speak in March. And the outcome that we're looking like, or success looks like, that our generations are doing this together more. They're engaging with each other better. They're communicating better, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's not something that's going to be solved by a 60-minute virtual
talk.
Exactly
right. Yeah, spot on.
We know that, right? And so that gives you a door that's now open for all of the services that you offer, not even just with you involved, but with your entire team at Persimmon Group involved.
Sure.
So what might that lead to when it comes to, it could be a series of programs, workshops, what have you. Tell me, actually, as a part of this, what do you consider consulting as a scope? What are all the things that you would put under the consulting umbrella?
Okay, so I'll start with that, and then I'll come back to your question. So
thank
for
you.
Me,
I know consulting, I double teamed you there.
It's okay. No, it's okay. Totally. From a consulting, it is everything for me personally, okay, where I'm at in my career. It's heavy with executive teams. It's around strategic planning. It's what I call advisement, which is not, so I see there's different kind of coaches and advisors. Some of those are about the psychological aspect, let's say, of an individual. And those are heavier leaning towards the academic side. For me and my team, we're heavy on the business experience side. So it's almost more of a mentor advisorship.
Okay.
So that area of strategic planning, looking at decision-making, prioritization, more of the macro, how do I work across my organization towards business transformation or market penetration? Those are things that I'll work on. I've also, of course, in my career, been a project manager. And so I can go down to that tactical level, but that's where a lot of my Persimmon team come in.
Yeah, you really don't want to be doing
exactly
at that level. You want to be the expert that's guiding the whole process of transformation from beginning to end.
That's right. And often sitting on the side of the table with the leadership team, helping to guide some of their questions and perspectives. So one of the questions I get from a lot of leaders right now is, I've got a leadership team. How do I know if they're asking the right questions? And that question by itself, or that comment, is coming directly because they're being disrupted, but the leader is not sure how. So the range of consulting can get down to business process change, team development and workshops where you're not just learning, but you're actually applying it into your own business. And I've been doing a lot of that, especially now in this digital space.
Yes.
Because value is very important in these organizations. They know they have a limited amount of time and they're looking for speakers at times or thought leaders to be able to say, great, I love your thought. I love your direction. Help me make this real with my team and organization.
Yeah. Implement.
Yeah, exactly. So when you ask, you know, kind of how do I get that path from, say, that call of a transaction of I want a generational topic, the first questions of, you know, what does success look like and why are you asking for this? Those give me a lot. I honestly don't sell at all during that process. I'm not a believer. I've been taught early on, don't sell, right? During the speaking, and I don't. And so from that perspective, what I look for is a connection. There are times that I can be on a stage and I can see the light bulbs go off in the eyes of the audience and audience members. And oftentimes they come up and speak afterwards. That itself may be the starting point. But just the approach to a speaking engagement, understanding why they're doing this, what do they hope to gain out of the conference beyond just my topic, that starts the path of them recognizing he's asking questions that aren't just a transactional set of questions.
Mm-hmm. And let's move, maybe we can move from transformation because we have a bigger problem than something that a 60-minute virtual presentation is going
yes.
to solve.
Yes, and you're exactly right of, you know, you're not going to solve the world's problems in 60 or 90 minutes. But what you are doing is, and this is what I focus for myself as a speaker, the whole approach towards leading and disruption requires a mental paradigm shift from the way we've been leading typically in most organizations for the past 30, 40 years. And you see that there are people out there who already are kind of thinking that. And what you're doing is you're just connecting dots that's allowing them to go, wow, you are going in the direction that I've seen the symptoms of. And you kind of just put it together in 60 to 90 minutes in a way that just clicked for me. And that's something I hear a lot from participants in my speaking engagements. Well, they'll say, that just culminated all my stuff, my thinking, my concerns. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's next. And that starts the dialogue.
How much do you think that you're selling leaders' confidence? Not selling it, but that you are providing leaders with confidence. You know, the confidence to make good decisions. Isn't that kind of all of our dilemma is that we're just not sure if we're making good decisions or not?
Yes. I agree with that. I would say to your question about, am I selling leaders confidence? I'm going to use a metaphor that I view that I see myself when I'm doing either consulting, coaching, or even speaking. And that is when you go to a trainer for working out the first time, they're trying to coach you. Are you doing the technique right? Where are you in the process, right? Where are you in your abilities? And there are some trainers that are going to tell you everything you're doing, Jane, it's awesome. You're great. You're just doing so awesome. But you're not really doing that well. They're just saying that because you keep paying them.
Right.
And there's others that are going to say, Jane, stop. You're not doing that correctly. I want to work with you on this. And by the way, Jane, I don't think that running a marathon is going to be the best thing for you this year.
Right.
You should focus in these other areas.
Tell you the truth.
Right. Well, I can absolutely relate too. And so that's what I feel my role is at times. So part of what is really out there today in a lot of the clients, and this is a shift generationally, by the way, with client leadership teams, is they want blunt feedback. Mm-hmm. They want to be told, you're not doing this correctly. And here's different ways you could approach it. But let's talk first about what you want to achieve.
Right.
That has worked really well for myself and my team. I don't consult as a revenue generator, honestly. I consult to make an impact, and not an impact of I created a presentation and you guys paid us for it. It's that I go back 6 months after we've left you as a client and you're not just implementing and still following what we talked about. You've taken it to a whole nother level. That is what jazzes me up as a speaker and as a consultant or coach, because when people come up and go, wow, that really had an impact. I had a person recently who just reached out via LinkedIn and said, I took one of your techniques. It changed my entire life for the past year. And to me, that's cloud nine kind of stuff for me. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning.
I love that. And maybe it might be helpful for us to talk about your definition of coaching versus consulting. Sure. I have always said to my clients, look, you're going to pay me the big bucks because I'm going to tell you what I think and what I know. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make you try to find your own answers. Whereas sometimes coaches, kind of from the true coaching aspect, will say that the goal is to, you know, allow the client to find their own answers. Tell me your thoughts on
that. So I believe it's a blend of the two. It's kind of like the working out part of you can go and start working out on your own, but I can look at you as, say, a trainer and say your technique is a little off. Mm-hmm. So I believe it's a mix of a person finding some of their own answers, but also being prodded with additional outside thoughts that challenge their way of looking at it and thinking. That's one of the reasons they're hiring a coach.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, facilitator versus a consultant. A facilitator is just pulling information out of the audience, typically with right. structure, with questions, with format. A consultant does that, in my opinion, but also challenges with outside perspectives. And that's where bringing in the perspectives of other industries, clients, case studies that we've worked through real time, that is very, it's in high demand because people want to know, don't just tell me what you think it could or should be. Tell me what's worked and what were the challenges and what when we try to implement that practically. So consulting for me is going in with a set of opinions to typically solve some sort of a problem or need in an organization. Coaching is at a higher level. It is working with either an individual or a team. Think of it more like a guide to help not solve all those problems, but to actually help guide them to solving those problems as a team or as individuals. But you are bringing in outside influence, perspectives, and knowledge.
Right. And I love after, my goal isn't to make my clients dependent on me.
Correct.
My goal is to teach them how to think more strategically so that they can do it for themselves later on.
That's right. And I should add, so one of the foundations of Persimmon as a company, mm-hmm. but I've carried that forward into my coaching and consulting and advisory business myself, has been we manage towards an end date. So there are some coaches, especially, and even consultants that just have the ongoing retainage ad infinitum. And that can work in a lot of ways. But I try to drive the end date, and the end date is tied to some sort of a completion of a deliverable, like an assessment report for an organization in consulting, or completion of certain outcomes that we've agreed upon as a coach. And so by doing that, and that kind of is a little bit where my project management background and history came in, was my view has always been this. If a CFO, a chief financial officer, ever was to pull up an invoice for myself or my company, I don't want anyone to ask, why are we paying them?
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been a really important thing as I've worked through very this clear. To say, am I bringing you value? And is it mm-hmm. you know, remarkable in that sense?
Yeah. And the deliverables are right there. Okay. So it might be helpful for people who are thinking, okay, yeah, Bill, really easy for you. You've got 25 people on your team.
Sure.
Let's actually, first of all, of course, someone could do it completely on their own. You could have, you know, one assistant or something like that and make this work. There's no question that you don't need to have a big giant team. But I think aspirationally, I would love to hear what the different chunks are of the operation so that people might think, oh, okay, maybe there is a hire that I could make, or maybe I should be thinking about, or maybe I want to have a company like Bill's someday. Break it down for us in terms of who were your first hires and what does that look like today?
Okay, sure. So my first hires, when I left corporate and started Persimmon Group, my intent was to get back down to the front lines and work with them. So my first hires were actually fellow executives from other companies who had the same philosophical feeling. They were tired of being so far removed from where the point of change or action's occurring. They wanted to get in there.
So you wanted people who could perform at the same level as you?
Yes, but they had their own areas of specialty or expertise, right? So the key was they'd worked through it in a career up to a point that gave them some a variety of perspectives.
Okay.
And that gives a much more holistic view of consulting.
Okay.
The second was then, as we started going through, I have and still have the same business development director, Josh Miller. He's been my VP of business development now since we started a year and a half after Persimmon was formed.
Mm.
We had enough book of business that we needed it. That's the only kind of sales that we actually really have. We don't have a sales team per se, because one of the things about the nature of consulting and coaching is you're often hearing and finding the opportunities yourself to a degree, because they're buying or hiring you, your ideas. And as you bring more people on board, that's a transition you have to work through from a soloist into a team of saying, I can bring other people on board and they can bring ideas that are beyond mine. So business development was one. The second was, at that time, I had a part-time accountant who really managed my books. Now, for a lot of people, if you're a soloist, you can outsource some of these things. I will tell you that as I worked through that, you know, early days, you're doing your own presentations, you're writing everything literally yourself, right? Including speaking stuff. And I am, by the way, not an artist. So right there, I have an amazing team that does that.
Can we back up to, was it Josh, your business development person?
Yes. Yep.
That's probably the hire that people want the most on the speaking side and potentially on the consulting side. Because I think what it does for you is it keeps the gas pedal down even while you're off doing the work.
That's right.
That is the hardest part, is to keep the funnel full, to keep it going, and to have somebody think about, how can I sell this thing that we're doing on a day-to-day basis? Was that a scary hire for you when you got there?
I would say for me, it was less scary because I had relationships that I knew were going to last for a while that I could kind of run on the gas. But your point is exactly right. When I started consulting, there's a mantra that I was taught, and it was 3-month horizon, 6-week firm, meaning that you better have a horizon looking out 3 months in advance, but you need 6 weeks of knowing if a clock is going to end on something that you think you have as your revenue stream.
Right.
The second thing I'll tell you, that this is something for people to think about, what do you want to do with your coaching or consulting practice? Coaching can sometimes be an easier sale by somebody who has background in product sales, because you are buying an hour or whatever time frame or program that you set up are. Mm-hmm. Consulting is a service-based sale. And so what was very important to me when I found and hired Josh and developed over time was he's really a consultant. Josh could be a consultant for Persimmon.
Right.
He's just not. His background, his education, he never had consultant officially, but he thinks in that term. So when he's working with a client, he's definitely bringing that consultative sales process of understanding their needs and getting them within about 80% of the target of what we need. And then he brings us in as whoever the consultant might be or advisor to kind of take it over the goal line with him.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you're bringing, that they have to understand business and what businesses might need.
That's
right. It's not a transaction.
No. And that is, if you want to do consulting, I've learned over this, because I've had different people that have been involved in aspects of sales, it's very difficult for a person who has been so bred on product-based sales to make the mental transition to consultative sales. It's easier the other way around, backwards. But that's just something to watch for. If you're going to be more on the coaching side, it may be okay to have somebody who has come out of more of a pure product-based sales approach and they've got good relationships.
Okay. So I interrupted you at your part-time bookkeeper accountant type person. Let's continue on with your other hires.
Sure. So from there, we brought in what was kind of an office manager, became the glue. So when you think about it, you've got a set of, there were about six of us at the time consulting and coaching in different ways. We have a part-time accountant, got a business development person, and we needed somebody that was kind of our glue, helping us with the proposals, ensuring who's on first, meaning like which projects and who needs to be engaged. Over time, that really developed, and it's developed into a few aspects. I have an instructional design content development team. it's actually in our company, it became a way of onboarding them where they become consultants over time. Ah,
beautiful. I love like and smaller projects huge. Leading to bigger roles. That is such a great idea.
And not only are they amazing graphically, artistically, you know, thinking about all of that, because we actually now have turned that into a business line where we have clients that we build content for them and they may deliver or they may ask us to help deliver in certain aspects. So we took that over time and said, let's build that into a business. So I have a team of 6 content developers. And also by working with them with speakers and working with our senior consultants and advisors, they're getting experience without necessarily always being on that front line. That's the hardest thing. You know, how do you take a 20-something and put them in front of a client in a consulting engagement?
Right.
And that has been really powerful because we get a win-win on all fronts. Our content's up-leveled, our presentations, but at the same time, which frees my consultants up to use their brain power for the things we want to have focused on. But we are also a very flat organization through all of this, and that allows us not to have this hierarchy of do as I say. It's much more about we owe each other certain obligations or commitments, right, in developing things.
We will be true to each other. Yep. Okay, so that's 6 people. And so you're able to say, not only are we going to help you solve this problem, but we maybe could offer like a train the trainer program so that you can continue to implement the solution.
Yes. Also a lot with e-learning. We've done that a little bit around the edges the last 12 months. You know, what COVID and this period have done for us is it's really pushed us into a global digital market for us beyond where we had been before.
Okay.
And that's opened up a whole set of new avenues. Things like SEO and our website have become really important. We're now getting asked from companies around the world, like on the instructional design, here's my need. Could you help me? I want to outsource partner on instructional design. And I have team members, they don't need any of us to go in with them. They're just going in and having the meetings, the conversations, and building the content directly.
It's a done deal. But instructional design then could be your foothold into a company could then lead to a bunch of other things.
That's exactly
which
right.
is a really interesting different door to go through. Normally we'd go through, say, a keynote door or a book door, but be thinking about all of the things that you could offer that might actually previous coaches, Lisa Larder, she has a whole back end where not only will she consult with you on your social media, but she'll actually deliver the back end of the social media and has a whole team for that as well. And I just think that that's so brilliant to be able to have some sort of back end to it.
Well, and your point is really well taken, Jane, because it could be a different back end based on whatever your needs are. For us, it was because they were seeing our training materials, our presentations, our speaking material, right?
How did you do that? When you get asked, how did you do that often enough? It's like, wow,
That's right. But for a lot of speakers, I think one of the best avenues is when you start shifting into some workshops. You know, you brought up earlier about the keynote and such. I believe if you have a workshop that's focused around how do I apply it to the general audience, apply it to this client, you're going to start hearing the things that are resonating with them.
Mm.
And that allows you to have the ask of, hey, would you like us to help build that for you or guide you through that or check in with you? And those are the questions. And you have to decide what's important for you. Like, where do you want to spend your time? But that's what started to spark some of these additional opportunities for us that has allowed us to kind of become a web inside of certain companies. And you're right. Our entry point, we have a lot of different ways we enter clients and then we can expand because they usually will say, we didn't know you did that too. And then all of a sudden we've got more opportunities.
I love that. Well, this is so interesting and you've got my wheels turning now too. I'm thinking about my own back end. Okay. So we've got this whole instructional design section and what else?
Then we started bringing in additional consultants and expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And so our consultants kind of fall into one of 2 categories. The generalist, which you would think of as being a typical consultant. They can move across industries. They can move across some areas of expertise. They're there to help solve problems or build solutions for where you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
The second is what I would call the more specialist. And that is where with some of our clients, they ask us to go and say, run a project for the entire life of the project. Or help us go and build a request for proposal. We've got one right now that we're doing where I'm doing the keynotes. But the challenge in the COVID environment is the association that we're working with has never done this in a virtual environment. So I've got one of my specialists who is focused on planning the entire event for them, because that's something they'd never done before. They were worried about that. So that person is kind of the stage manager, if you will, and project manager of getting the different elements recorded, prepared, et cetera, across myself and others at the event. Mm-hmm. So that's where I've got specialists that are doing some sort of a, almost like an augmentation or a support aspect client versus a get in and get out, which is what your consultants are typically doing.
Okay. That's interesting. So this whole other consultant, and are your Persimmon group speakers, is that a part of that? Or are you?
Yeah, so speakers is on its side as well. So okay. Like I mentioned Jill earlier, when we started that 15 years ago, Jill, and then there's a few of us in Persimmon that are also speakers, mm-hmm. but we're also, you know, consultants, advisors, et cetera. Right. President of my company, Sarah Gallagher, has been a speaker for years and is amazing. So we built that in where it also gave us a little bit of flex and challenge with Jill leading that area. And then that content development team that I mentioned earlier, they are able to build content for whoever that may be, external client, speaker, a client, a consulting engagement. And that allows them to be kind of like a shared resource that then I can throttle that up and down based on my needs between full-time. And then I can bring in part-time, or I can outsource between kind of your gig workers that are out there that I can use to say, okay, you do graphics. You're awesome at graphics. I will work with you to just do graphics.
Okay. Final question, because I know we could talk about this all day long. A president is a really big hire. And did that one make you nervous? Sure. What was your, that must have been the hardest find and the hardest and the most nerve-wracking, was it?
And the, probably the most attempts, I would say, too. So, being a founder-based company, I never wanted to be a founder that couldn't let go, because I didn't build the company for me. I built it because I love building teams. So when I hired Sarah.
Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, sorry.
Did you have a goal to sell this company at some point in time, maybe?
No. Okay. So my goal was to be able to shift my role. Okay. And we made the decision right before COVID, of course, was where I've been launching my Lead for Tomorrow brand, which is really taking that culmination of the last decade into leadership and disruption. Mm-hmm. With Sarah kind of went through that whole spectrum we just talked about. She came in as what we call an associate. That's our kind of entry level resources.
Okay.
Worked in through as a consultant, project management, business consulting, facilitation, speaker. Went through all of those parts. And I can tell you that when I hired her, I could tell immediately that she had it. She had the questions. She had the thinking that I'm like, okay, now my job is to give her exposure, give her experience, and let her find her way through that, right. What her strengths were going to be. And so we planned for this, not just with her, but with the entire leadership team to really build out where I could step out and become just a CEO type and founder. They run the company. And honestly, so just to give you a sense of this, she was named president in February of 2020.
Oh, love.
Right before COVID.
Talk about being thrown into the fire.
And has done an amazing job along with my whole leader. I'm so proud because I had a factor. I'm not the only factor in that. But watching the way they led through all of this and the pandemic, and we all consult, we all coach, has been incredible to be able to see. And now they're taking the company into the direction that they also see they want to go into. Mm. And I think COVID has just helped to accelerate that.
I love that. And let's just know that you haven't all been together under one roof now for probably coming up to a year.
Almost, March.
A year you have had, I'm assuming you have like an office sitting somewhere empty.
We do.
Also painful, no doubt.
You're exactly right. It is hard to write those checks every month. And we know we're going to go back, eventually.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Bill, wow. We have covered a lot of ground. Really fascinating. Apologies if anybody who you have on staff didn't get mentioned here. We just kind of ran out of time because you're... Okay. But I really want people to be inspired by this and be thinking about, you know, my next book is called How to Scale Your Speaking Business. And we kind of just talked about that in exactly that format. Bill, if people want to get in touch with you, there might be somebody listening who is a good fit for you in some way, shape, or form. How should people reach out to you?
Sure. So they're welcome to either, they can check me out on LinkedIn and connect with me there, just kind of DM me. They can reach out via email. Our websites for the Persimmon Group are thepersimmongroup.com. Okay. And I also have billfournette.com, which is my speaking and lead for tomorrow brand as well.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Jane, if I can leave you with one thing, I would say for all of the speakers out there looking to make or entertain some of these moves, my two parting thoughts would be one, keep an open mind and ask a lot of questions about where do I, you know, what could happen? What's the possibility? Because that opens doors for you. And the second one is then don't forget of what got you here, your values, your expertise, your strength, and your passions, because that helps you to decide which doors to go through.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Bill Fournette. I appreciate you coming on the show today. I appreciate all the time I get to spend with the amazing Jill, and I'm excited to catch up with her and hear about where the business is going, the speaking part of the business is going next. For those of you who are listening in, thanks for tuning in to the Wealthy Speaker Show. And with that, we will say, see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. If you need help building the speaking business of your dreams, head over to wealthyspeakerschool.com. and take advantage of our 20-minute next step call. Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast.